You're listening to RIA Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RIAradio.com.
I mean, because you're doing business all around the country. From my notes here, you're doing deals in 17 states right now. Like, how many deals are you do you have going consistently at a given time of properties under contract?
Yeah, properties under contract. So there's a learning curve, and I think we were talking about the transition from, you know, like initially starting as wholesaling, and that was my vision, is to, you know, build up a wholesale business to pump out a consistent $20,000 a month at that time. That was my initial goal for 4.5, 5 years ago. And then that just grew. And I just started kind of nerding out when it came to marketing and like figuring out how I could maximize ROI, return on investment on a specific marketing channel. And then it just grew. So over time, I was like, okay, well, how many dollars can I make on this channel? And how much can I spend before it doesn't really make sense anymore? And then as I started to increase my marketing spend, it increased the amount of leads. And then it increased the necessity to bring in people to take care of those leads to the point where we're going to waste marketing dollars. And I would be bluffing you if I told you that I haven't wasted probably quite a bit of marketing dollars over the years. Ted, you asked me like how much we're doing to support that. And last year we did 93 deals, which I would say at least 80% of those were in Nebraska, half wholesale, half purchase, wholesale and flip. And so because of, you know, some of the transitions of the market, the wholesale market somewhat dried up. I felt like, you know, in Nebraska specifically, and even before some legislation came in, buyers were being a lot more conservative. There was a gap between what cash buyers were paying and what sellers' expectations were. And so we're like, uh-oh, like, what are we going to do? Like, we can't just rely on a $3,000 wholesale fee when we have a, you know, $80,000 a month overhead for our business. And that's the thing.
Is that about right? About 80K per month?
Yeah.
Whole.
Yeah. So that's the thing that I think
downstairs, and she's like, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm pregnant again. Is that
seriously? Yeah. Like, legitimately, she is. Yep.
How does that compare? Because you do a little bit, but you don't wholesale. You hold a good majority of them, Owen. But how many deals are you doing in a year? And what's your market spend per month?
Yeah. So
last year, let's say last year.
So to contrast, yeah, this year is a little bit of an outlier because it's been a lot less deals, but the margins have been really good. Like, we've had, and that just could be luck. There could be some of that involved too, but we happen to get like three different wholesales where between the three of them, we probably made $250,000. Mm-hmm. That just on three deals. So that provides you with a lot of cushion because we don't have staff like Brandon. It's just me and Brandon.
Well, that's the point I was trying to get to, is that, you know, here's Michael that's doing $80,000 spend per month last mm-hmm. year, 98 deals with, you know, what, 15 to 20 staff members. Mm-hmm. How many deals did you do in 2022?
2022, we probably did right around, I would say 36 to 40. I don't know off the top of my head, but right around, we were doing about three, not quite four a month. Prior years we were closer to like, you know, we would do roughly 50 a year, 50 to 40 to 50. And I would say last year was probably more like three a month ish. And our main marketing spend was on pay-per-click and direct mail. And that provided enough leads. But again, this wasn't like the phone wasn't ringing nonstop. It was just like, you know, leads would come in, but they were good leads because they were motivated seller leads. They were pay per click. They were looking for us. We weren't looking for them. So we were able to convert those into, you know, when you have two people and you're both doing stuff in the business, you're taking responsibilities that Michael is paying people to do and putting them on my plate and Brandon's plate. So we were calling the utility company to get power turned on. We're going over and putting a lockbox on the place. We're taking pictures of it. We're, you know, we're doing those things. So this is, I find this topic endlessly fascinating too, is just the way you can structure your business can be so vastly different and both be successful. It just depends on what you want to do with it. And are both partners on the same page about staffing? You know, because I, like Michael, I have a buddy of mine that, and I think I've mentioned him before. His name is Travis Overhue. He owns and operates a, like, they do a lot, and they have grown from being like, they would buy stuff at auction. They were, you know, like single family guys, and he and his dad would just buy stuff, and you know, they would buy stuff here and there, and then some of them they would keep as rentals, some of them they would sell, etc. And then after a while, they started holding on to more and more, and then they had to build out operations for property management, deal acquisition, stuff like that. They just got busy, right? Mm-hmm. And when people get busy, either they do less and stay the same staffing level, or they want to grow and they hire more staff to absorb the extra work. And then your job is to steer the ship, right? But it's just endlessly fascinating to me because, like, you know, you and I, Michael, you and I were talking over text about, oh, what, 3-4 weeks ago. I was at WealthCon in Vegas at Ryan Pineda's event. And that was really interesting, too, to meet all these people that have done the scale thing and then some that have really just maxed out what they can do on their own. Stay small, keep it all. Get big, blow it up. You know what I mean? There's just two different ways to do it. But what I thought was really interesting about that conference is he harped on the whole, and I know you've been to that before. So he was, and I don't know if he's recently started doing this, but he was really harping on the $250K a year thing. Like you
cash,
have
like, yeah, liquidity.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it, like his whole stance was like, until you hit a point where you have residual or you have income coming in of $250K a year, you kind of have financial insecurity. But once you hit that level, then you can start making moves and doing things. But like, and I just thought that was really interesting. But yeah, we have, I would say, similar businesses, I think, now, you and I, but on a much, much different scale and operations wise and staffing wise, obviously. You're doing way more. We're doing a lot less, but our profit margins are still really good. And that's how we've been able to do it. But like, we have different goals. Like, I don't want to grow I don't want to buy 93 deals a year. But that's great for people that do have the infrastructure to support that. I just think it's fascinating.
Tell you what, man, it's definitely interesting, and it's a totally different camp, right? Like, you have one camp over here that's looking to be like, not corporate, but like big enough to where as an owner, the goal would be to have an operational manager, which we don't have right now, and replace us as the owners and still collect a distribution. Like that's the goal, right? However, easier said than done, right? Especially when the market shifts, you know, wholesaling changes in the state that you were making huge rips on before, you know, it makes you have to pivot. And then, not to mention, what if your team can't pick up the pace and perform when there's a gap in this market? So your pipeline, you were used to maybe supporting a $75,000 a month overhead because you were making $250 a month, or, you know, whatever the numbers would be on the marketing. And that's the pressure that people don't talk about, right? You have to pay for the $75,000 a month. You already spent the marketing dollars. You have to feed your team. And so it's one of those things, man, where this has been we decided to keep our entire team. I've had some mentors who and masterminds were just like, everybody's cutting back, everybody's firing everybody, and we just decided, you know what, we're gonna keep going, and we're gonna make this happen. And so we kept going, and there were some months where, you know, we lost our shorts. We paid everything else, but thankfully, because of the reserves from a really good 22, we were able to sustain through, I would say, some trying times. And this is me just being completely honest, right? Like, there's no fluff here. Like, this is the reality of the business that we're in. It's all fun and games to say, I've got 15 employees and I'm making millions of dollars a year. But the thing that we just talked about that you pointed out, Owen, is it's not about what you make. It's about what you keep at the end of the day, the bottom line. And so I'm still evaluating this, right? Like I'm still deciding, hey, do I want to have this big team? We're kind of at a pivotal moment where it's like things are progressing. Our pipeline is full. We have a bunch of deals closing this month. I think we'll buy somewhere around 10 houses this month, really good deals. And we're making more money because we're not wholesaling. However, you just have different problems. I mean, as you can imagine, right? You buy 10 houses. Thankfully, we have an amazing construction coordinator, which is another, gosh, dang it. I feel terrible for these. My team, shout out to my construction coordinator. He is a rock star. He's the one that keeps all this going. And I forgot to bring him up. Yeah. So
he
anyway.
Does such a good job that like you don't even think about the work because it's on the radar. I love it. Yeah. That's the hallmark of a great employee right there. What I'm picturing is you guys seen the movie Office Space, where the guy Milton is in the basement with his stapler.
His red stapler.
Like he's still getting, like he's just coming to work every day, but he's not getting paid. That's how I was picturing your guy in Dallas that you forgot about. So where we're going with this whole conversation is the fact that you were guns blazing with Rocket Home Buyers. Is that still what it's called, by the way? Your transactional.
That's a good question. And that's a, ooh. It's not called Rocket Home Buyers anymore.
Okay. Okay. Is this the big reveal?
Talk about that?
Yes. Let's talk.
Okay. Have you guys heard of Rocket Homes?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what I did in terms of marketing to get us the attention of that company.
Oh.
But okay. We got the attention of Rocket Homes somehow. And so I think maybe just from the podcasting and I don't know. We were casting a pretty wide net. We were slinging marketing nationally. And we got a letter from Rocket Homes attorney and said, hey, your business name is quite close and confusing. And so we would like to ask you to change names.
Cease and desist.
And we'll pay you a fee for doing that.
No, I actually didn't get away with selling the company to Rocket Homes, unfortunately.
Oh, so, man.
Did you offer it up?
We of course. It's still in conversation. I'm waiting for the check, guys. I haven't received it yet though.
Well, can you share what is the name now of your home buying business?
So we changed over to Launch Home Buyers because we could keep the Rocket, and the Rocket's been the staple in branding.
Nice. I like it. And there's also Rocket Car Wash too, which I know we've texted about. So be expecting a letter from them.
I just assumed that you owned both of those companies. I didn't know.
No. So we were kind of in a winding path of going down the conversation of you having a wholesaling business to kind of start off with. And then there was some legislation that was introduced in the state of Nebraska where you did a lot of your transacting that basically outlawed wholesaling without having a real estate license or being a licensed realtor. So that's kind of what we've alluded to here with a big change and shift in your company dynamic. And then I love the fact that you said you have the same staff, a lot of people that went through a transition, which I can only imagine. I'm really want to hear you talk about it, but I had to be really tough, man. Like you're like, here's the foundation of our business. And then some government legislation comes in the picture and is like, oh, you know, that business you just started, that's cute, but we're going to outlaw that. Basically, it's like, what the hell, man? Like, you know, you invested so much time and energy and money and people's livelihoods and all that. What happened? I mean, what was that like hearing that news?
Well, I mean, it was to me, like I always look at things like an opportunity. So there's two different mindsets, right? There's, oh man, those guys suck. I can't believe they're doing this. But then my thought process was, okay, well, I guess the barrier of entry to wholesaling just got a lot bigger, right? So less competition in regards to that. So more market share. That's the way I kind of looked at it, because we knew that we had the capability to buy every property, which is kind of a different situation from maybe me 4 years ago when I just started, right? I didn't even know how to buy a property because I had done enough deals leading up to that legislation. I knew that we were going to be okay, because keep in mind, I'm buying these properties at wholesaling prices and we were averaging $22,000 a wholesale deal. And so if I can wholesale it to an investor and they can still flip it and make a 15% profit, I think I'll be okay if I can just buy the property, even if I have to just sell it as is. And so that's kind of how we pivoted, is we just said, okay, well, we can continue to wholesale. And obviously you guys can maybe educate a little bit on that, but we just decided it's just easier if we just buy them, as crazy as it sounds.
Are you seeing these regulations throughout the country, or I know for a fact that Nebraska, I believe Oklahoma, have it for sure, but are you starting to see this in other states?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. There's a few states that have followed suit. I think Oklahoma was one of the first few, and then Nebraska kind of did the same thing.
Copy theirs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, we just don't... we have our brand in Nebraska, so we get deal flow from having that recognized brand. However, we don't really do much marketing to those states, and we do wholesaling in other states.
Got it.
Of the types of marketing that you have out, and you've done radio, TV, pay-per-click, direct mail. What else? Any other like creative types of marketing you guys have done? Bandit signs? What else is out there?
Yeah, it was really guerrilla marketing in the early days. Bandit signs and texting and calling. And we essentially shifted pretty much to primarily inbound. And so, you know, think of, we tested billboards out. They were not so great. But TV has been a staple. We've been doing TV, and it took a little bit of a pause on it for a while, but we're running TV commercials pretty much all across the state. Even did it in South Dakota for a little bit. Thought that'd be a good idea over the wintertime. Not so much. But PPC, Facebook ads, direct mail, the inbound ones.
I was just in a class with Clint Bartlett recently, and he was speaking about his marketing. And he mentioned how he just kind of did some cutbacks, and they decided that the marketing was the area that they're going to cut back in. And he said that they, you know, stepped away from the TV commercials and the radio ads, and also stepped away from all the mailers. And that they've turned 100% into PPC, pay-per-click ads on Google and whatnot. And then the other one was they pay for leads off of a couple websites that have taglines. I think like, you know, sell for cash, whatever. You know.
Like affiliate marketing type?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So they said they've divested and everything else, and then only invest in those two forms right now, which are the their largest lead forms.
You know, it seems like, Michael, you've split tested, I'm sure, probably a lot more channels than I have in my business. And most of my stuff is network, pay-per-click, you know, some SEO related leads that come in as a result of that, and then direct mail that's most of it. And then we get deals from, you know, realtors for off market stuff. Sometimes we buy on the MLS. I mean, we still do some of that, but isn't it weird, man? I like, it's so weird to me that sometimes you may have a year where direct mail just kills it. Like you get such profitability out of that particular channel that you're like, oh my God, we have to double up on this. And then you double your spend, and then like you get half the deal or like a third of that because it just stops working for some reason. Like, it's so weird. Like marketing channels, like sometimes, you know, texting and like cold calls and stuff like that may be really profitable. And then it's like saturated and then it's out.
Well, I don't do that, but I was kind of wondering if that's what people are talking about. So if everybody's talking about, hey, mailers are killing it for me right now, and they hear it in the meetups, they hear it on podcasts, there's probably about 10, 15, 20 groups in your city that are doing it, all of a sudden now it's going out and it's saturated. Right now, you know, you're hearing, you know, a handful of people that are saying, oh, I'm not doing mailers right now, I'm cutting back. Well, maybe this is the time that you probably want to do a mailer, because everybody else cut it out of their business model, and it's going to be the only mailer they're getting right now, so they're not getting thrown away as fast. I used to just get piles of them at a couple of properties. I haven't seen a mailer.
Well, I think also what you've got going on right now is the fact that a lot of people that, you know, when the market's great, like it has been for a long time now, you have people that enter the game, and there's such a low barrier of entry to direct mail or, you know, some of the stuff that you can do for marketing that a lot of people can do it that don't really have much experience or they're not well capitalized. And then you have market conditions change like they have. And even, you know, Michael's business model has gone from more like transactional stuff where he's assigning stuff and not having to bring cash to the table to now they're bringing a heavy amount of cash to continue doing these transactions. But like what we have right now is a washout of, I think, a lot of investors that weren't really investors during, you know, the good times where everybody and their brother is going to the meetups and it's fun. And, it, you know, like you can make deals by walking outside and handing out a flyer to somebody on the sidewalk. Now it's like you have to make good deals. They don't just fall in your lap and it's not easy like it was. So I think a lot of that difficulty and continuously getting replicating and making deal flow come and work and being profitable is not easy. Mm-hmm. And that washes out a lot of people. So I think you can still cherry, like now we have the opportunity if the, it kind of like levels the playing field when you have a downturn in the market, but there's a ton more risk now too. And that's what organically washes it out because you may have something that was a slam dunk and then now rates have changed like, you know, so fast that buyers are like, you know what, I'm going to hang out and not buy now. And so you may have flips or you're like, there's 50 grand in margin here. And then guess what? Now you got to reduce again. Now you got to reduce again. We're coming up on winter time, back to school.
Got to pay your hard money lender.
Yeah. Sharks. I just wanted to call that out because I think that when you have a good business model set up and you're set up properly to like take some punches and pivot when the market conditions change or legislation comes into the picture that wasn't there before, mm-hmm. and you have solid business practices and you're, you know, well capitalized enough, or at least you have the right connections to maintain your staff and all that. I think it's admirable that you have done such a drastic change with going from doing a lot of wholesaling to not a whole lot of wholesaling now, and you've shifted to different markets that are maybe more friendly to that type of operation. So kudos to you. And I just think it's really fun to talk about this kind of stuff because everybody's got a different business model and it's fun to see which one works and which one doesn't and which one can stand the test of time.
And you've listened to this and you've watched those infomercials at night, you know, why are you going to pay that $25,000-$45,000 when you're getting all the information right now from the guy that graduated and is killing it?
That's right. So Michael, what do you see now? Like, I know, you know, recently some of our people that we mutually know, we've had some conversations and I know you're kind of like looking at maybe some other things that you want to do within real estate. Like what do you see coming up the pike for maybe whether it's launch or maybe your personal holdings, like, or do you have, you know, kind of like rental acquisition plans?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's such a good point on the marketing, how much things pivot, right? Like you just have to be adaptable and that's just business, right, in general. And so we've had a lot of changes this year. And one of my biggest, I guess, ahas over doing a couple hundred deals in the last few years was, man, I really wish I would have kept more properties, right? You've probably heard that from many guests and you hear it a lot more. And so we're like, how can we do that? How can we feed this machine, we'll call it, while keeping property? And so moving forward, we've just really made a very intentional agreement that we're going to keep a property every month. We're going to do a lot more deals in, you know, a couple of months, but we're going to keep one home run deal every single month. And if we do that, that's the plan for at least a year. So just keeping the best deals. I would love to keep them all. If you guys have any ideas for how to do that, I just haven't quite figured it out. We've tossed around the idea of paying ourselves an assignment fee. You know, we've talked about finding a private money to pay a little bit more, but just to feed the operation, but haven't quite figured it out yet. Above and beyond that, you know, I see us doing some bigger deals, you know, whether that be multifamily, self-storage, some sort of a commercial sector eventually. But right now we're keeping the main thing until we can get it to the point where if we take our eye off the ball, if you will, it's not going to affect our business and revenue.
What is the favorite? Now you've been to a fair amount of events. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah.
What in your opinion, and I know this is, there's different flavors of these things, but what did you get the most bang for your buck out of? Like, what is your favorite event that you've been to that anybody catching this might, you know, want to attend?
That's a really good question, man. I've been to, so there's events, there's information, and then there's like masterminds, right? I would say like one of the masterminds that I'm a part of, called Investor Fuel, has been really powerful. I think when you can put yourself in a room to like rub shoulders with people who are doing some really big things, that's really, really beneficial. Informational events, I mean, I don't go to many of them anymore. I kind of got to the point where I'm like, okay, well, there's seven people who are throwing me information, and now I want to go start an e-commerce store, or now I want to go buy crypto. And I lost some money in crypto last year, and I failed at two Amazon stores. And so I decided that probably wasn't the right path for me. And so I tried to keep myself with very real estate specific stuff. And eventually someday I'll go start businesses.
Reminds me of the Real Lunch today. Two of the guys are like, yeah, I rent out my camper and I'm killing it. And Bob Koenig is like, my camper brings in more profit than my 6-unit building.
Yeah, he did say that.
Actually, he said his whole portfolio combined is exactly what he said.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I have a camper I've only used once this summer.
I know. Go ahead.
I was just literally talking to somebody about that. I'm like, people buy a camper and they use it like once or twice a year, and then that's it.
For the record, the first summer we used it probably a dozen times, but this summer the water heater went out, and I cannot get anybody out there to fix the dang water heater. Like, I've left multiple voicemails with companies.
I got a guy for you.
And so I was like, so just now my wife's like, I'm not going camping, that thing doesn't have hot water. I was like,
yeah, I don't blame you. Cold showers for everyone. Hey, you could do a cold plunge every day.
I love cold plunges.
I'm sure you do. Oh, man. Well, this has been, God, so freaking fascinating. I love just how open you are about all this stuff. And this is a good episode for somebody catching this to kind of figure out, okay, what are the trials and tribulations with scaling a business, and how do you operate virtually, and how do you hire people that live not in the same city as you and make it work? And I commend you for all that. You've certainly done some things that were not easy when you're starting a business. I mean, packing up, moving across the country with a new partnership, that's hard. Hiring people that don't live around you or that you can see every day, that's hard. And you've you know, flown in the face of convention with pivoting and going into multiple different states. I don't know. I just think you have a really neat story, man. And I love you look like you want to say something, Ted.
Oh, finish your thought. No,
I was just going to say, like, it makes me wonder, though. I mean, we've talked a lot about your successes, but there's got to be something in there in all these deals you've done that hasn't gone just like you had hoped. You got anything like that we can talk about? Because we have a section that we call
Failing Forward.
This week's Failing Forward is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T to lend. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online at jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
Where we cover this exact topic every week with every guest.
And it's one of our favorite topics.
Yeah, it is. So please don't leave us hanging, man. What do you got for a Failing Forward?
Oh, do I have a
Okay. Well, all right, tell us. I can't wait.
All right.
He's rubbing his hands together. He's so excited.
I know. I'm just like, where do I start, right? I think I've had five in the first 6 months of this year. But, you know, between contractors and, gosh, there's just so many. But I'll talk about the contractor one because I think that's a really good valuable lesson, so somebody else doesn't make the same mistake.
Ted's going to be taking notes here because he's had some failing forwards with contractors.
Oh, man, trust me.
Yeah, so we hired our first project manager in anticipation to the ramp up, and we didn't have a great system in place for how to really oversee all of the projects, and we thought it'd be a good idea to buy a house in, you know, Dunlap, Iowa, and a house in Western Nebraska and Tecumseh. I mean, we bought houses all over the place. Like, I can't really fault somebody for not being able to really effectively manage them, but we had a few flips that took about a year. And you know, thankfully we bought them correctly, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But there was one property and I thought it was a really good deal because it was listed for like $230 on the market, but it was in North Omaha, but it was like a brand new house. It was like a Habitat for Humanity home. And my contractor who went to the property didn't throw up any red flags or anything, but essentially overpaid for a property in North Omaha. And we bought it for, I think, $155. And he dropped the ball. He had started the project. We probably put $15,000 in with him and basically had to have somebody else come in and restart the whole thing. So all in all, we're sitting on a property in North Omaha that's partly my fault for approving a purchase in a neighborhood like that, not having that boots on the ground. So there's a few things, right? There's the contractor, but there's the boots on the ground. And then obviously I have to take full responsibility because it was my decision to purchase the property. But I mean, that's one of the very few properties that I know for a fact we'll lose money on. We've lost money on another one, but
maybe that's one you hold on to this month just to, you know, because time fixes everything.
Yeah. If it wasn't for such a kind of a bad neighborhood, like it's definitely the nicest property in the neighborhood. So that's the biggest mistake. Know the neighborhood. I had wholesaled a bunch of property in North Omaha and I just didn't quite know this pocket and how bad it was. And so we've had the property under contract to sell a couple of times. We did a nice remodel on it. I think we had a contract for $220 on it, fell through, had a contract for $215, $219, fell through. I think we fell through three different times because when people go there, they're like, I don't want to live here. And at that price point, they don't have to live there. They can go live in a better neighborhood for the same price. And so, yeah, that was definitely a failing forward experience. You know, if we sell it, we'll lose money.
Yeah. And just to clarify something here. So what Michael's describing, a neighborhood a part of town in Omaha, Nebraska, that kind of has some tough, it has a tougher reputation because there are some lower income, higher crime rates, lower income levels in that part of town. And it can be tough to operate there. You have to really know it's a street by street situation there. You may have one street where it's like, oh, sweet, these are all, you know, really nicely kept up houses. And then you go over, you know, one street or two streets over and everything's boarded up and you got people hanging out on the stoop all day drinking 40s. And you know what I mean? Like it can be tough. You gotta know what you're operating in there. And yeah, I would agree with you though. It's like, it may look good on paper. And then when you go there, you're like, oh, because you look around, you know, it's the Google Earth view versus the Zillow view of just the house. Right.
I tell you what, I just sold a property over there yesterday and in an area that, you know, not too desirable, but and the houses next to it didn't look great, but we sold it roughly about $100,000. And that particular property is just a 2-bed, 1-bath and got a renter lined up for $1,300 a month.
Wow.
So, and there's no garage. And the house next to it was also ran down. It's a 4-bed and I was talking to the lady there because I was really trying to get her to own a home instead of rent. Just an amazing lady. I'm like, you should really buy this. This could really be life changing for you. We went back and forth on it, but she was paying $1,500 for her place.
It's crazy.
And she's like, they won't do repairs, won't do nothing. So I guarantee you, I don't see rents in that area, no matter what it is. Well, there's one house that it was a 4-bed, 3-bath with a 2-car garage. I saw in a super questionable area over there, but my property manager was getting $2,000 a month for that house, which just blows my mind. So you might want to look at rent opportunities there if it doesn't rent, because if it's as nice as you said, there's a great opportunity to put it up on the rental market, and there's some city programs out there that will back it too.
If you're gonna
lose your butt on it,
I will take a different tack on this, and I will say, rip off the frickin' Band-Aid. That is my, that's my whole,
that all depends on where you are in your investing career though, too. And you guys are in a better spot, but somebody listening to this might only have one or 10 properties, and then that's not an option.
Well, okay, maybe.
I like these perspectives because you both have a really good point depending on where somebody's at in their journey. And we're at the point where if this was our only deal, we would probably keep it because it would maybe cash flow. Like this is a 4-bedroom, 2-bath. It's a 2000 some house because it was built by Habitat for Humanity. So somebody would probably pay upwards of maybe 1800, 1900 to the right person. Therefore, that would probably cover our debt service on the property. So we wouldn't actually lose money because we would just hold on to it long enough. But then to your point, Owen, you have to know your buy box, right? Like, does this fit into the neighborhood of and the tenant clientele of people that you want to work with? And for us, the answer is kind of no. You know, we haven't gone there yet.
That's exactly my, well, you're mirroring what I think about that because I picture, yes, it's a failed flip. So why not turn it into a rental? Because time heals all wounds in real estate. That's what basically what you're saying, Ted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And my rebuttal to that is yes, but what about economic vacancy? Because when you get into tougher areas, they make cash flow like a monster, but that's only if you can collect rent. Now, one thing I will say about Nebraska and like Nebraska, Iowa, kind of like the Midwest states, although some are a little bit different, it's much, much easier to get people out if you really need to. Like if you have to evict or if you need to evict somebody, like it's a much shorter process here. The runway is a lot shorter. But if you're in a coastal state, a blue state in general, and that's stereotyping, I know, but like it's generally tougher. You're going to have more, you know, tenant friendly laws that make it a lot more difficult to get somebody that's not paying out.
It's not a political thing. It's just a fact.
Yeah. No. I love this though, because I like the fact that you have branched out into multiple different states and you've gotten experience that is not just in our backyard here. You know what I mean? In Nebraska, Lincoln area.
So what is you're in 17 states now. So what is your favorite state to work in? As far as simplicity with the laws and still getting deals.
I mean, I have to say Las Vegas, and that's Nevada, because it's in my backyard. And so I've made a lot of really good connections. And I love being able to put out a wholesale deal and then just getting totally like, bit up and chomped up, because it's like everybody's so hungry for property. And so, I mean, you have all the professional teams, you get the rate, like there's just a ton of growth. There's Amazon factories, ton of growth. Although the market did kind of, we'll call it correct itself in Las Vegas. It's a fantastic market for even rentals and midterm rentals, I guess, is one thing that I didn't mention that we're looking into. And I have in Omaha right now, I have a midterm rental, which has been pretty good. But Las Vegas for sure.
Well, we might talk. I have 3 midterm rentals for sale off market right now. Maybe it'll interest you.
Hey, there we go. I might be interested.
And this is how deals are done.
This is how, at the table, buddy. Hey, I do have a question. You mentioned your wife. I usually ask a question about work-life family balance, but before I lead into that, how is your wife involved in your business? Obviously, she seems like she's definitely the person that's lifted you up, helped you grow, you know, the backbone to you and your business and probably vice versa. But is she involved in the company somehow or any of the companies?
She is an amazing stay-at-home mother, and she takes care of the home, and that's all I can ask of her because she's been my biggest support system. And so she is not involved whatsoever. And I do my best, right? Like us business owners, like we always want to talk about our business. We always want to talk about deals we're doing. Like I do my best to kind of keep that at bay. But we stay in our lanes.
I got it. So how do you have that work-life family balance? I mean, you have 15 employees, you're working deals in 17 states, you're doing 100 deals a year or more. Like, is there one thing that I always use as an example is I like to take off my devices and put them in the garage when I get home, just so I'm disconnected and I'm giving my family their attention until the kids are in bed. I got young kids like you, Owen's kids are a little older, but he does the same thing. And, you know, what's your kind of recipe to have that balance between the two?
This is a really good question. And it, for me, this actually, it was a challenge. It got to a point where people can talk about, like, this is just reality. Like, people can talk about how they want to keep that separate. And it's easy to talk about. It's fun to talk about. But the reality is it's a lot harder than what it sounds like to actually do that, especially like for me right now. I'm at home. I'm in my home studio, essentially. And so what I ended up having to do through some coaching and some mentorship, to me, it's priority to make sure that my, because I just have to say this, right? Like, everybody starts a business to make money to provide for their family. Typically, there's a lot more meaning and purpose behind why people start a business, but a lot of people end up ruining that component because the business consumed them so much. And so for me, I just essentially drew a line in the sand. I said, I'm not ever going to let that happen. I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to take care of my family. And through some work this year, I made the decision that I'm going to take my office and my business outside of my house. And that's going to help me keep these things separate. So really the short answer is right now when I get home, like I do not disturb, my phone's shut down. But before it was like 24/7, like it was, hey, I got a lead, I got to take it. You know what I mean? But when I have a team, that's also another reason why I wanted to have a team, is so I can have them make sure that we're not missing opportunities because that's their job. Hmm. And so the biggest thing was just separating it, but also shutting it down. Not just shutting the phone off, but like shutting it down right here, right? Because it's like, there's a bazillion things that I'm sure you guys can relate to this on our minds 24/7. And if we don't like be intentional, like actually get down on our knees and play with our kids and do things that are intentional, like have a play date or like do things, you know what I mean? Like just being a parent, a lot easier said than done. But that's one thing that I've been very focused on this year, is keeping those two things separate.
I love that answer. Wait, a couple other questions I got for you here while I get you on before we kind of wrap up. Do you have any crazy or weird investment stories? Anything you found in an investment property, or things that your team found in investment properties that are just kind of like blow your mind?
Actually, I think one of the crazy times was a property that Owen actually walked into, but he walked into the wrong house on a wholesale deal we had. So
what?
Maybe Owen can tell you what the crazy things were that were in that house.
He doesn't remember things very well.
No, I remember this one. If it's the one that I'm thinking of, this was Reagan.
This happened multiple times for you, or what?
Probably. But I think this was a house around like 50th and Leavenworth, or like somewhere adjacent to Leavenworth.
Yep.
And yeah, I was going to look at this deal, and it was a, you know, like definite fixer upper property. And I don't know what happened there, but I remember this now because I went up. Did I walk in? I'm trying to remember. Did I walk in on somebody and they're like,
yeah, I think you, Reagan told me, and I just laughed out loud, 'cause I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so funny. But yeah, it sounds like you walked into the wrong house and the guy shooed you out. Like, yeah, you thought it was an open
house. But I made an offer on the way out. So,
did you really?
Yeah, you never know.
By the way, I pay cash for houses and I'm interested in this one. This looks really good.
So, I can add, I don't know if you want me to lead this or if you want to describe what we're talking about here, but
I can't describe it like you can because you were actually there. But there was some weird stuff in that house. I just remember Reagan filling me in a little bit, and I had no idea what was actually going on there, but there was some pretty weird stuff in there.
Owen doesn't remember.
I remember this. there were like these, I don't know if the person that lived there was I assume they were a sculptor or an artist or both, because there was like some pretty unique stuff around here. And I think I could probably find the picture of this, because I took a picture of several things in there, but there was
Walking around.
Oh yeah. 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 There was like this.
You didn't just walk into there at the front door.
No, wait. Hang on. Let me make sure I have this described right. What you're talking about is the house I accidentally walked into.
Yes.
What I'm talking about is the house I was supposed to be
at. Oh, okay. We're talking about. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So when I'm at this house I'm supposed to be at, there's like, and I mean, you, Michael has an, I don't know if she was like an acquisitions specialist or she was a dispo.
Dispositions.
So she was working on selling it, basically, like to a buyer. So I'm walking through this place and I'm like, what the hell, man? There was some weird, weird stuff. There was like a huge sculpture at the top of the stairs, like sitting on the landing, where it was like this. It was a sculpture of somebody's face, but there were fingers coming out of it. And it was like a 3D type situation, right? So they were like legit fingers popping out of this face, like a super weird
God, you thing. Imagine, you imagine coming home drunk one night and then you're like, just like, I got out of my Uber. I just want to get home. And then all of a sudden you look up and you forget that you got this thing and the moonlight's hitting it just right.
It was something else, man. But there was like, you know, 3 foot bong. There were like all kinds of just weird stuff all around this place. Like it was crazy. But yeah, I do now that you mentioned that was the one. And I do remember walking into somebody's house because it was, you know, addresses are hard.
Thank you for helping me out there, because I can't describe it like that when I haven't actually been there. I just remember hearing some of the things.
Oh God, that was a weird situation.
Well, with stories like that, I mean, we can only get better stories in this part.
We're almost out of time. Let's get into the OT with Owen and Ted.
So we have this section that we hit everybody with at the end, after you're all buttered up. We cover the same questions each week, and the first one that we have for you, Mr. McDonald, is what is your first book going to be titled or about? And do you have a first book? That's the better question.
I do. So thank you to AI this year. I can't take all the responsibility. It was one of my goals to write a book, and I decided to write a book about how important it is to have a why and how that related to my real estate journey. And so I wrote a book. It's an ebook. Okay. You guys can grab a copy of it if you want. We can drop the link. These guys are cool with it, but it's called The Why and the Way to Wealth. The Why and the Way to Wealth.
Why and the Way to Wealth.
Okay. And like, how long did that take to write?
Well,
30 seconds with ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I'm a little bit embarrassed to even say this, because although I did put some deep thoughts into it, and there's some purpose behind it, I actually voice to texted the meat and potatoes from me, and then I AI content purposed the some of the other, like the practical things like wholesaling and the strategies and the underwriting, the transaction. Like I essentially shared my story, but then talked specifically about, hey, how do we start and scale a business
using, you know, it's funny though, because there are a lot of ghostwriting, like there's a lot of ghostwriting that happens out there that people don't realize, right? And a lot of it is exactly what you're talking about, where you actually just sit with a person, you just tell your stories and they record them, just, you know, kind of podcast style, and then they go back and edit it and turn it into like functional content. And then there's ghostwriting AI style, which is what you're talking about, which is you it's still you and you're generating all the, you know, the inputs for it, but it fleshes it out. But then you have to go and edit it. You have to say, does this make sense for what I'm trying to go for here and all that? So yeah, it's interesting. And like, I guess it depends on what your end goal is too. You know, if it's a marketing piece and you want to have relevant content for the topical stuff that you want to attract, then I think it makes sense. But yeah, I know where you're coming from with that too, because I've thought about this a long time. Like, I feel like I have a book in me somewhere. I don't know how to get it out. And
I
struggle with the whole, like, you know, because I have friends that have done the ghostwriting thing and they regretted it afterwards. And then obviously with ChatGPT, we know that Ted's alter ego is now ChatGPT for all the content that he puts out on social media.
I write the content. It just makes it better.
Right. But you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's interesting. Like, but you're still an editor. You still have to, you know, approve this is Michael McDonald approved. So yeah, no, I get it. I get all that. Like, I've gone through that mental, like, you know, exercise as well.
If you go to RiaNebraska.com, all the content there I wrote, but then I took it and I put it in ChatGPT, and then I had to enhance it and then make it better because I'm not a great writer.
Yeah.
So. All right. So I didn't answer your question. It was 2 weeks from start to finish.
Oh wow. Okay.
2 weeks. And what's funny is I actually wrote the bulk of the book using ChatGPT like while I was taking a bath, which sounds absolutely absurd. But like I literally went and got in the bath and I'm like, hey, I think I'm gonna write a book today. And an hour later, it was pretty much like the nuts and bolts of it were pretty well taken care of. And then I ended up, you know, over the next week putting a lot more thought into it. Then what took the longest was the cover. Like the cover and then actually getting it put on Kindle. But anyhow, it's just an ebook right now.
Shouldn't be you talking about nuts and bolts while you're sitting naked in the tub. I mean, and
sorry, I didn't mean to do that to you guys.
Okay, buddy. If you could interview anyone in the world today alive, who would it be and what question would you ask them?
Ed Milet, for sure. Mm. And there's a lot of questions I would ask that guy, but I think the biggest one would just be, what was like the pivotal part in your journey where you just like essentially got out of your own way to really get to a totally different level? Because there's so many levels to business. And I think a lot of us, including myself, like we can really get in our own way. And hold ourselves back, whether it just be a limiting belief or whatever it is. And so when somebody's bought an island and like owns private jets and like has done stuff that Ed Milet's done, I feel like he would have some pretty good advice in terms of just that mind shift.
So when are you gonna get him on your show?
I don't know. I actually know some people who do some mentorship with him, and so maybe I can pull some strings. We'll see. You guys should have him on your show.
It's on our list.
Make it happen, yeah. Ted. All right, Michael, we are at your funeral. It's very sad. Your wife's there. She's got your three kids. Who's going to give your eulogy? And what do you hope they're going to say about you?
Yeah, so, man, I'll tell you what. This is probably one of the things that I've heard the most about that people, like some people do, is like writing their eulogy. And I just haven't had the courage to do it. It's just like a hard topic to talk about. What would they say about me? I mean, I think they really say that I was a great leader, a great dad, a great husband. I think that's the most important thing for me. Obviously, I want to leave my family a legacy. So like, you know, when I pass away, I don't want just like my kids to not have to worry about it, but like I want my kids' kids, like I want generational, like curses broken. And so hopefully they can say that was attained through the wealth building in real estate. And then the question would be, did I live, did I love, and did I matter? Did I make a difference?
Well, that might be the most thoughtful one that we've ever had on here.
In a while, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good, man. Good job. It's almost like somebody fed you these questions before we started this podcast.
Michael, what mentor in your life has had the biggest impact on you, and how have they influenced your career or personal growth?
You know, I attended an event. I was having a hard time with this one, but I realized what it is. So I attended an event in Utah.
Oh, Utah. Okay.
And I don't know if they even do it anymore. It was a guy by the name of Cody Hoffhein. He owned Wholesaling Inc. Have you guys ever heard of Cody Hoffhein?
I have not.
I have not.
He owns. So we followed. We went to his event. It was a 3-day event. It's called Scale. And learned a lot from the guy, but just an amazing human being in terms of just like, just personality, family man, you know, a lot of similar values. And he now owns 73 home buying franchises called Joe Homebuyer. So shout out to my guy, Cody Hoffhein, because he's made a huge impact in my life.
Have you had him on your podcast yet?
I haven't, but it's funny you ask because I'm going to have him on in the next month.
Yeah, send us the episodes. We can hear him and see what he's all about.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Denlis, do you have a question?
Yeah. Before that, I want to know, how old are you, Michael?
How old do you think I am?
Guessing 31.
I was going 27.
It's a good guess, Ed, or Ted. I'm going to be 31 in October, so I'm 30.
I was basing off the timeline of stuff that you kind of said with the kids and leaving.
Okay.
Yep.
That is very impressive. So what did you want to be when you were younger? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Little McDonald, when he was going to become Big McDonald on a farm.
Yeah, right. That's a good one. Never heard that one either. I wanted to be a football player. I thought I was going to be like a professional football player. I was really big into football when I was young, and played about 10 years of football. And so, yeah.
Were you a quarterback?
I was a quarterback.
Yeah.
Do I look like a quarterback?
You do.
Sunshine. Yep. Yeah.
Kirk Cousins Sunshine. Right there. that's great.
Okay. So I got a question.
Ted has a question.
I wrote this question out before you said something a minute ago, but Michael, where is your thinking place? Where's the spot you go to get all your ideas? For example, me, I like to think on the toilet or in the shower. That's right.
Are you really putting this out there?
Yeah. So where's your thinking spot, Michael? Wow.
It depends on the day. Having a thinking space is important, just so everybody knows. So Ted's on to something.
You have to.
In the morning for me, it's just like, it's either like in a chair in my living room or either on my, in the time of year, obviously maybe not outside, but I have a back porch or I have a front porch. And depending on the day, I'll go sit out there and just kind of, you know, think and be.
I was thinking about this. It's funny I said that, huh?
While on the toilet?
No. Yeah, because I quit taking my phone to the bathroom with me because I get stuck in there for a while looking at social media. So now I'm a week strong without bringing my phone into the bathroom with me. And I found when I sit in there or in the shower that I just go ahead and I come up with a lot of ideas. So I was wondering, where are other people's thinking spots?
Oh, and where's your thinking spot?
This is so Jim, gross. Sonia. I don't even want to participate.
No, you have to answer. Where's your thinking
spot? Mine is my truck. Like when I'm in my truck, I get like, I don't know why, but that's my jam, man. Like I'm always thinking about stuff. Like if I'm listening to a podcast, I'll turn it down.
Yeah.
I'll do it. And then I'll try and actually record a video about it. Well, even if it's like not polished or whatever, like if I'm just like, here's what I'm thinking about. And then I just get it out. Right. And then I can go back. If I want to create social media content out of that, I'll go back and like review it, edit it. Maybe I need to record it again and make it actually presentable or whatever. But that's my deal.
I'll get it in when I'm in my car and I get a quick idea. I pull up the notes section on my iPhone and then I talk to it real quick and have it write it down so I don't forget it.
You should take video. You can see everything.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. What about you, D?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't have a thinking
spot. Everybody has a thinking spot, dude.
Not once, but like I just... I'm thinking no.
Where you, well, there you go. In the podcast studio.
Yeah, but I also think while I'm driving, I also think while I'm in the toilet. Like I think all the time.
I think if we ask this question more, you're going to get more toilet and shower responses than you think.
How about we do this? Let's just have you on your own create a new podcast called Ted's Toilet Talk. We can just not ever bring this up again on this podcast. That would be awesome.
You always just want to get me off, don't you?
That's a segment that I'm going to introduce. I'm going to introduce Ted's thinking spot. There we go. Oh.
Yep. I wrote a book in a bath, guys. Come on.
That's what I was. That's my point, though. I came up with this, and you said it right afterwards, and I was like, oh, I think your thinking spot is
Ted's toilet talk. I feel like you're going to write a book on the toilet. Okay, that's your your claim to fame.
My feet will go numb by then.
Okay. Can we please, for the love of God,
I'm
move
not
on?
Editing it out, but continue.
Go ahead.
All right. I am sincerely sorry on behalf of all the listeners for what you just went through, because I am sorry for myself. Okay. How can our listeners support you? What's the best way to reach you? What are you looking for in your business right now? All that fun stuff.
Yeah. So, dude, I got to give you a quick shout out, Owen. I've seen you posting out that content. So do a great job. I know posting content's not easy. So in anticipation to that, I just wanted to give you a shout out.
Thanks, man. I'm not great at it, but I put in the work.
Instagram, you can follow me at, it's Michael McDonald, REI. And
not
I have
Doobie,
a website.
Not the Doobie Brother.
Not the Doobie Brother. I was going to say official, but I didn't want to take his thunder because I might have gotten in trouble. Had the real Michael McDonald actually calling me instead of Rocket Holmes. But thevirtualmillionaires.com, it's a website I created. I have some free resources on there for people to check out. And you can grab a copy of my book if you really wanted to. Check it out now that you've heard the backstory on it.
But, I'm really curious now. I might just get it. Ted will probably read it on the toilet. But
I listen to all my books in the car.
You probably could. It's pretty short.
Well, guys, I appreciate you guys listening to us. Michael, thank you so much for coming. We've literally been trying to get you on here for 2 years now, but we've been waiting for you to come into town in hopes that we'd share an old fashioned with you, but it just came to the point that this needed to happen. So thank you so much. We really appreciate a review on your favorite podcast listening form. We do have plenty of reviews lately.
Oh, okay.
And I got, that's new. And I got like five or six to go through, but today's from Kim P. She says, first off, it says great content and banter with a smiley face.
Aw,
thanks, Kim. I've learned so much from you guys and your guests. I appreciate the variety of trades, methods, styles, and target markets. Thanks so much for giving back to the community, Kim P.
Thank you, Kim P. You're the best.
Thanks, Kim. Well, with that, Owen Dashner, we see us out.
On behalf of Rhea Radio, Dennis Bertrand, and Ted Kosh, I'm Owen Dashner. You've been listening to Michael. Alexa, would you write me a book while I take a bath? McDonald. Signing off.
I wrote on here. I go, Michael, taking big house rips. McDonald, sign off.
I love that. That reminded me of that. Michael, have you ever seen the movie Boiler Room?
Well, with all this insurance talk, I think it's time to get into today's. With all this, I think it's time to get. Okay, radio edit.
All right. What? Let's see. You're going to have somebody give your eulogy at your funeral, unfortunately. What legacy are you hoping you're going to leave behind? But more importantly, what are they going to ask you? Hang on. Let's f-ing restart.
Yeah, that was crap.
I don't know what happened. Yeah. I just had a stroke, I think.
You okay?
I don't. Might need mouth to mouth. Dentless?
Yeah, Dentless, not me.